than murdered. Other friends have flown before. On the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before. And the bird said nevermore.
You're listening to The Call Podcast with Brandon and Josh.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a brand new edition of The Call. It is a Baltimore Ravens podcast where we talk anything and everything Baltimore Ravens football. Thank you for listening to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Baltimore Sports Report Network, Player.fm, Overcast, Google Play Music, and Satchel. Well, again, this has been a history-making season for the Ravens, and they didn't stop there on Sunday against the Titans, a game I said, I could go either way. I don't know. I think it's going to be a pretty tight race. The Ravens came out and dominated the Titans, shutting them out at home for the first time since December 11th, 1976. It's a little bit more of that history making that we're talking about. Joining me, as always, to talk all about it, he's a history teacher. My buddy Josh, what's up, man?
My niche, man. I love talking history, and we're not going to stop there. You're kind of opening up this road we're going to go. I think everybody's going to really, really be in for a treat today, because I didn't know all this stuff, and apparently the Ravens' performance just opened up a whole new world of like records and oh my God, man, I did some digging and I found some sources. Where do we even start? But I just saying, wow, that's how you respond to a little letdown in Cleveland. I mean, obviously it was a huge letdown, and my sarcasm there, but that's how you come back. You don't think the Ravens were a little on edge after that loss? They tripped over themselves. That was a win that got away, but they were 3-2, and they went into this game, the third stint on their three-game road trip. And dude, this team just responded in a way where it almost felt like, even though it was 21-0, they dominated just like they did, if not better than the Bills game in week one.
Yeah, this has been it's been crazy the way that they have responded to that Cleveland Browns game. I think they were a bit embarrassed. I know they felt it, and they came out in Nashville in Tennessee and really let the world see who they were. And one of the biggest statements, I think, is more of a personal thing, really, is that, like, you and I last week were talking about Michael Crabtree and how he's got to step up and how he didn't perform well. What's the first thing the offense does? So they get the ball to Crabtree. I think that's a huge sign from the offensive coordinator, from Flacco and John Harbaugh, saying, look, you had a bad game. It's okay. Step up. We still believe in you. And Crabtree did show up. And I think that was the best thing they could have done, is started the game on offense the way they did by handing that ball to Crabtree and saying, like, you know, you're still the guy.
Right, and instill confidence. You know, they kind of worked on it all week, but that just shows you, you know, the bounce back. And how many times do we say week to week, but the bounce back in Crabtree and the offense is showing the confidence. I mean, you know, he had the drops there, and we knew the drops were drive killers, and he dropped a touchdown. It hit him right in the hands. He had a crucial slant route on a third down that would have been, you know, a huge gain, and he just flat dropped it. And he has 8 drops or so leading the NFL. And it's like, and we even joked, is Rashad Crabtree, and oh my gosh, and he's got the drop season. Did Perryman teach him that? And the jokes couldn't stop coming. And you kind of fell for him, like, all right, man, where's the catches that you had in the first couple weeks? But what confidence that Marty called the plays and went right after it. And if you remember, I'm not comparing this to what last year, because we really had the drop concerns last year. But last year, this kind of reminded me of what happened, where I have to go back in there, but I remember we played the Raiders the week after, and I think we had a letdown loss, and it was like we had new deep plays. Remember last year, then it was like the first play of the game against the Raiders, went it like a 50, 60-yard bomb to Mike Wallace to start the game, like, and we talked about it then. That's how the Ravens responded. Whoa, throw deep ball. Okay, well, they caught it and did it. Here it's you know, everybody was bashing Crabtree. Oh my God! And should we trade him? Are we in for a letdown? And the Ravens actually instilled into the game plan on that first drive, to get him the ball, and that was resilience, and he scored. So it just was awesome, to see the resilience showing the team. But how about it, man? They started right off the get go. Dude, the offense was just clicking again. I mean, where do you start? I mean, there's a lot of good in this one. Really not even that bad. I mean, we have a concern, and we'll get to that. But, to see Crabtree really step up and put that behind him, number one, it showed the confidence and showed the confidence in Flacco to him. You know, Marty towards Crabtree, and just shows that, hey, just because you have a bad game, shake it off and come back next week and correct it.
That's right. And the offense, you know, they were able to find the end zone on all three times that they went into the red zone. So that is absolutely huge. But that's why I wanted to start off with the offense. I wanted to talk about them. They obviously did a fantastic job, but this game was owned by the defense. The defense was unbelievable. They just came out. They made a statement again. Not letting the other team get any points after halftime. I mean, just insane. This team, like Eric Weddle said, I mean, even though it looked pretty bad last week against the Browns, not the same Ravens. I mean, history making once again. But let's talk about the after halftime. What happens to this team when they go in for a break at halftime? Like, are these guys just drinking like Red Bulls and going back out on the field? What's going
on
there?
That's my secret. That's what I do. Red Bulls and, I mean, I do that tailgating. That's where my secret comes from. Dude, I don't know, man. And it's just, it's something magical. But what halftime is about is about adjustments. I mean, remember in Pittsburgh scored 14 points in the first half, nothing in the second half. Remember the Bengals game, they scored 28 points in the first half. It was 28-14 on that Thursday night game in that loss. They only got 6 more points the rest of the way, 2 field goals, and we unfortunately fell short in that one because we were so far behind the eight ball. It was ridiculous. It's the same thing. You know, the Browns, they kicked 3 field goals in regulation in the fourth one in overtime, went 9-12. And the Bills kicked 1 field goal. And the Titans were blanked, and the Denver Broncos, they had 14 points quick in the first half, nothing else in the second half, not even a field goal. So it's just, you look at these 6 games and these 4 wins and 2 losses, it's remarkable. And if the offense finds their way in Cleveland, we're talking about a 5-1 football team right now. And obviously, if they really didn't get jet lagged or whatever was the problem in Cincinnati, I mean, you could say woulda, coulda, shoulda. I mean, you could say it about the Browns. It could be, you know, 4-1 or whatever. Besides the point, it just, what, I don't know what it is, but it's special about this defense. And you know me, I love talking defense. I love defense. I can't say it enough. I mean, how the league is going with the rules and the calls, and they want more offense. I mean, just this past Sunday, Monday night, there were 2 incredible football games. One had 83 combined points, and one had 63 combined points. So, I mean, in the league that wants to put that out there, and that's another thing, is not only what they're doing from halftime and beyond, and what in these 4 games, their number one defense with sacks and takeaways and points allowed. We can go on about it, but Brandon, isn't this awesome in the age of the NFL that we're in, that they want to be pass happy and points happy and cater to your fantasy football team and really hone in on that market, which I think that's probably why they're doing that. I'm not going to go down the road saying fantasy football screwed up the NFL for generations. I'm not going down that far, but just think about it, what they're doing. All the things are against them, and they're swimming like salmon upstream and saying, you know what? I don't care about your passing offense. I don't care about the calls. I mean, and look at this. They had 11 sacks and all these pressures and no roughing the passer penalty. So not only are they doing things right on defense, but they're doing it the right way. They're not going at it maliciously. They're not doing things wrong. I mean, imagine if they tried to go after Mariota all day and then half the time they get flagged and there's 15 yards extend to play. I mean, then that would frustrate anybody, and I don't even play, you know, because I feel for them. It's like, dude, you can't even do your job. But and not only that, but there's a lot of moving parts. And I think it was attributed to some of the players. I think Smith brought it up that, hey, that shows good coverage on the back end, because if the receivers are being covered, no matter if it's man or zone, and Mary only has so much time, it's allowing the pass rush to get there. You know, Andy Dalton's always been good at getting the ball out quick, and a lot of quarterbacks, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, and we're going to see one this Sunday in Breeze, they've been good at getting the ball out quick to counter that blitz. And I always just yell and scream, you know, whether I'm at the game or TV, like, just you got to recognize that and switch it up, but they just don't. So, but right now, this defense, dude, they're one of two teams left in the league that's allowed less than 100 points. Ravens are 77 points allowed on the year. 77 in six games, and the next nearest defense is 96. So, you know, get me wrong, you know, the Ravens are doing everything right in the age of the offense, and it's just remarkable to see. And Brandon, I'm not going, you know, crowning them way better than the 2000 this 2000 defense that we had here. That was something incredibly special. They allowed 165 total points. So, just to put it in perspective, the Ravens allowed 77 points in six games. The Ravens in 2000 had 165 points allowed all year in 16 games. So the Ravens, you know, are already busting that door halfway there in six games. You know, can they do it? But they're allowing a league best 12.3 points per game. And that's closest defense of 17. And it's just remarkable. You know, they're what they were able to accomplish. And they were one shy. I researched it during the game as everybody was asking me. They were one shy of the league record, or if they, I don't know, their second would have tied it at 12, was done on several occasions. So two more sacks would have gotten that, because everybody kept asking, now that we got the franchise record, what's the NFL record? But it was just something special, because we just talked about it. At the group of Reagan fans around us, we were, when they started getting up there and like, they're six, we started counting them, they're seven, and we're high fiving. When they had nine and they needed two more to get the, you know, one to tie and one to break the franchise record, and they got two on that one drive, that was phenomenal, man. Just absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely it was. I do want to go back, though, real quick, and you did say, you know, they go into halftime and they kind of make some changes. Is that due to a new defensive coordinator? Because we did have the Titans, you know, they were being coached by Dean Pees, and you kind of saw what happened with the offense and Joe in the second half, is that they played really well. He was known not to make many changes and not do that. So could that be really what the big difference is this year to compared to last year, was new offensive coordinators that are willing to make those changes at a halftime?
Yes, sir. I've been an advocate since day one. Don Wink Martindale is the X factor that no one's going to be talking about, then he don't even step on the field. It's the guy on the sidelines. I mean, the guy, I don't know about you, dude, but he just looks like a defensive coordinator. He's got that scowl and that, you know, the stare, and he just looks like a mean, nasty, get in your face, let him play. But not only that, but Darius Smith backed him up, saying he lets us fly, he lets us do what we do best. And I feel like he puts the players in the best position to win. I mean, you know, I remember an exotic blitz call. You remember the sack that Eric Weddle had on Baker Mayfield last week? You know, blitz right up the middle untouched. You've seen players getting involved, you know, batted balls, you know, sacks, pressures, you know. Yeah, we're longing for those interceptions and pick six, and I think if we keep playing like this on defense, they'll come. But we've nearly had a sack fumble. I mean, the turnovers weren't there, but the way they played, it doesn't even matter. You know, it's funny, the Ravens lost a turnover battle on Sunday, but won the whole war and then some, you know, because they took care of what they needed to do, and a lot of three and outs. But not only that, but it complemented, because – and you can see what happens when the offense kind of helps out the defense. I don't know if you really check this out, man, but like – you know, how many times they did not go converting a third down when last Sunday against the Browns. So let's say the Ravens get the ball, they call two plays, it's third down and whatever, long or short. They don't get it. The defense just comes off the field maybe five minutes in real time minutes, and then they go back on the field. The offense butters a three and out. Defense got to go back out there. They didn't get the rest. Then they're trying to stop the same offense. Yes, I know the other offense had the same amount of time of rest, but the defense, man, you know, you got to give them rest. But it speaks volumes when it happened just like the Bills game. You know, the offense gets the ball first, take it down, long drive, take time off the clock, score a touchdown, you go up. The Ravens defense go out there and take care of business, because now the Titans are playing from behind, so they have to tweak their game plan, because now they might, instead of going a run first offense, they're like, okay, well, we got to make up 7 points early, so let's let it fly. And then because there's passing opportunities, more opportunities for sacks. And I think that's why the Ravens were more successful in the sack front, because of and the blitzes and the pressures, because once the game gets out of hand, you kind of have to go in all throw mode with maybe a few runs in there to keep the defense off, speaking of Titans game plan. So, and what I love about sacks is, man, is – yes, it's a pass play trying to develop, but when the Ravens can get to Mariota or any other quarterback out there and sack them, that's one less play they have or one less opportunity to gain yards or gain plays. So let's say Mariota completes half of those passes for 10, 15, 20 yards or a touchdown or a long play. You don't know what might happen. So you're taking 11 less plays from them in the passing game, so it's special. Anytime you can get to him and force him, whether he's running out of the pocket, throwing it out of bounds, anything you can do to disrupt that play is a win. I don't care if it ends up an interception or a complete pass or a sack, whatever. If it doesn't get result in a first down or a positive play for the other team, it's a win for the Ravens in a defense and for us as a whole. So, you know, and what the Ravens did, they almost got out of their character too in the offense. You know, 17 play, 94-yard scoring drive, that never happens. I read that and I was like, is this the same Baltimore Ravens team that fields this kind of offense? I mean, this is the offense as you speak of when Peyton Manning takes over. But you know, it's just incredible, man. It just everything was just firing on all cylinders. It's almost like they could do no wrong.
That's right. And like you said, the Ravens made history, 11 sacks, which was amazing. They changed
their sacks, 6, 6, 6, 6. If you follow the Ravens Twitter, it was kind of funny.
That's right. And they added 10 more S's to their Twitter handle. So it's Ravens. And this is crazy.
Like a snake.
Mariota.
Marriott. I might as well stay at the Marriott. I mean, seriously.
He's at the Residence Inn. He completed fewer passes, 10, than he took sacks, 11. Absolutely insane stat. The fact that happened, just, I mean, it's unfathomable, but a big name that was a part of making that kind of history was Zardarius Smith. He got the AFC Defensive Player of the Week.
My boy, Big Z, I've been telling you, finally.
That's, yeah.
Every time I've been on this guy, like really.
He got 5 tackles. He got career high 3 sacks, 1 forced fumble. I mean, absolutely fantastic. This is a contract year for him, though, right?
It is.
So, I mean,
that's why he's doing it.
Exactly. I mean, I don't want to talk about that, you know, week 7 that we're in at this point, but man, can the Ravens afford a guy like Zardarius Smith? The way that he's putting up numbers today, I kind of feel as if he's looking on the horizon and he's going to see a big paycheck that's not going to be in Baltimore next year.
Dude, that's another thing about that is because you almost don't want to know if they're – someone did ask me that this week. They're like, oh, is he playing for his contract? Which is obviously rhetorical. Yeah, he's playing for his contract. But that's going to be interesting to see because – there is a one CJ Mosley who's up for a big payday. So can they give CJ and Zardarius a good package? Because again, with the NFL, you can't keep everybody together. And we always see the other players walk like a Ben Grubbs or Cleitio Smelly in the offense, or, you know, like the defense. We've seen a Dallas Thomas leave and Ed Hartwell, Jared Johnson, and all these role players. Another one that comes from the Super Bowl year was Paul Kruger. He left to go to Cleveland.
Oh, Kruger. So, I loved Kruger.
Yes, me too, man. And one of the players that reminds me of him is Brent Urban, you know, in a way. And shades of Jared Johnson. Jared Johnson was one of my favorite Ravens all time, man. It's just, he was just grinding, gritting, and just doing things, man. And just love WJ, what he did for us in Baltimore on this defense. And you just think of all those role players, and they can't keep them all. But if it comes to, you know, the linebackers they have Bowser there, but he's still under his rookie deal, drafted last year. You know, I like to see him keep Smith, maybe let Bowser go. I don't know how the contract's going to play out, but I would love to see a way where they can keep both or all three, because, again, you got Matt Judon again. So it's, you know, the offseason is going to be very awesome to cover, because, you know, it's going to suck because, I mean, the season's over, but it's going to be awesome to see how this plays out, because we have such a deep linebacker and pass rush core. And then what might happen with Suggs? Is he going to retire? Who knows? But right now he's still playing at high level. He was getting in the mix in the game on Sunday, man, doing his thing and leading the charge. So dude, overall stellar performance, and just some of the notes, because I know you guys are chomping at the bit to get the history lesson. So are you guys ready? You ready, Brandon?
Let's do it.
So I'm gonna class is in session here. So I want to ask you, Brandon. The Ravens in six games have yet to allow a touchdown after halftime. Who was the last team to accomplish this in the NFL after the first six games?
I mean, am I allowed to use my cheat sheet?
I might let you slide.
I got a feeling it was a team from Detroit.
Ah, the Roaring Lions of Detroit, yes. And that was the last team to actually accomplish this feat. But it wasn't recently. It was probably well before your parents' parents were born. This was a long time ago. Well, actually, could it be their parents' parents? Yeah, it's 84 years since this last happened. So the Ravens did something on Sunday that hasn't been done in 84 years, man. Like,
are you kidding me right now?
Now the big question is, can they continue this streak? Can they go seven games without a touchdown after halftime?
That's, dude, and in this, with this Sunday, this is what's special, because Ken Wyman of our local sports fame, 105.7 Fan, actually made a great comment about that, because we are facing Drew Brees, and we know what he's capable of and know what he's about. Obviously, a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer, but Ken Wyman said this, and it was very funny. He goes, Brees better get it out in the first half because the shop's closed at halftime. And I laughed big time, and that's right, because it's like, hey, Ravens after halftime, no. You ain't seen that end zone, especially rushing or passing. So, and if you guys are fantasy football enthusiasts, you got your hands full if what you want to do, because the Ravens are very scary defense right now, and they're playing at home in a semi-primetime game right now. And it's just right now everything pointing up in what the Ravens can accomplish. But what they did in Tennessee – and some of our news and notes here, I mean, Za'Darius Smith came out and had a huge, huge performance. But not only that, but speaking on the numbers game history lesson, you remember how earlier, Brandon, I reverted to the 2000 defense saying this team probably won't get on that level, mm-hmm. but it's special. I mean, they're accomplishing things that the 2000 defense either hasn't, or, I mean, it's crazy because the 2000 defense didn't do this. Obviously, it's a franchise record, but I want to ask you this. The previous record was 9. Do you remember the last game they did that on to set that mark before this weekend?
I don't.
It was a Thanksgiving night game against the Niners in 2011.
That was a great game.
Yep. Yes, that was a great game indeed. Yes, yeah, Suggs had a crazy game like Za'Darius Smith had. And speaking of that, revert back to defense. This is kind of crazy because it happened with the 2000 defense, but – the Ravens allowed 106 total yards. Yes, you heard that right. 106 total yards. The defense allowed in Tennessee. This is the second fewest in Ravens history. The first fewest was in 2000 against the Bengals, which was 94 yards. They held the Bengals to under 100 yards total offense. That was awesome.
Huh.
So, yeah. So the Ravens were bringing back nostalgia days, man, and just reaching back into history, and it just keeps getting better. And, you know, while we're on the history of that, I'm going to ask you, Brandon, the Ravens shut out the Bengals, or you remember last year, 20-0 to start the year, they shut out the Titans this weekend, 21-0. How many shutouts do you think the Ravens have in their franchise? I'll give you a hint. There was 4 of them alone in 2000. So I just gave you 6. So how many shutouts do you think? Yeah. So how many shutouts do you think the Ravens have had since 1996?
I'm going to guess 22.
Take it down a little bit notch, about a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. How about 14?
14.
And actually, it's the most in the NFL since 1996.
Wow, that's 14 great.
14 shutouts. So again, man, this is something else to be proud of this franchise. I mean, yeah, I know they haven't made the playoffs in 3 straight years, but you don't see the Browns or any other team doing these kind of things. I mean, you know, and they're winning football games. They're 4-2. And if you had told me that the Ravens are going to be 4-2 after this mark, probably wouldn't believe you. I said 3-3 maybe at best. But look at their wins. And I know they had a letdown in Cleveland, but Brandon, do you know what they just did? They went 2-1 on the road on a 3-game road trip in the NFL. That's hard to do. If you'd have said, oh, you're playing Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Tennessee all in a row on the road, I would say you at least win one game. Maybe it's against Cleveland. Tennessee beat us last year. The Pittsburgh's always Pittsburgh and what their passing attack is, and they went 2-1. And I can get over the Cleveland losses because why? Because you end up beating Pittsburgh, and you end up beating the Titans soundly. And obviously, I thought they were going to lose to Pittsburgh on Sunday night in Pittsburgh. They usually do. But it's just the records and all that. It's just how it goes. And if you just said, okay, let's lose in Pittsburgh but win Cleveland and in Tennessee, you're still 2-1, you're same record of 4-2, but it's the quality of the wins, who you beat and what you did. And I've always said, this brings a good point, is you can just look at a record, you know, and I want to bring this up for a reason, man. The Ravens are at 4-2 and we know where, but if you just looked at 4-2, didn't know that they lost to the Bengals, didn't know they lost to Cleveland the way they did, or beating Pittsburgh, you would say 4-2 after six games is a pretty healthy record, right?
Right.
I mean, obviously, what, you're only two games off a best record at 6-0, who are the Rams, and the one game off of the best record at AFC, which is 5-1, so who the Chiefs have right now. So, you know, they're not that far off the pace, but it's after six games, if you want to really get fun and talk playoff picture, they're in the sixth spot in wild card, so you just got to keep winning if you want to get there. But you got a long, long way to go. You got 10 games left, six down. And it's looking pretty mighty fine, but I just want to bring that perspective because Bill Parcells always said, you are what your record says you are. The Ravens are 4-2. That's what they are. You know, but I want to bring up this for a reason. The Houston Texans, and here's why. Houston Texans are one game behind us at 3-3 record-wise, but you would think, obviously, 3-3, 500, mediocre, right?
Right.
But they're on the uptick because if you just look at the record but not really dive in, they start at 0-3 and 1-3 straight. Right?
Right.
Same thing. Patriots. They started 1-2. They're both the same record as us right now, 4-2. The Patriots have won three straight games. So there are some teams that are up and coming. So the Ravens, doing what they do best, they have to keep winning at a good pace to keep pace in this kind of AFC realm because there are teams on the rise. Just because they're 4-2, you can't take your foot off the gas. And Flacco alluded to that this week, and so Harbaugh and everybody else. Suggs said the same thing, echoed it all. You cannot, you know, come home against a premier opponent like the Saints come off a bye and just go right flat against, especially at home, you know. And I feel like the place is going to be raucous. You got 4-2, and this is the last time that fans are going to get a taste at home to see Drew Brees. Obviously, on the tail end of his Hall of Fame career right now and what he did, but it's going to be special, man, to roll right into the Purple Friday preview edition. You know, Brees did something special Monday night. He broke the all-time passing record, which was special. But Brees, we have an opportunity to see him enter a different environment here in upper echelon. You already know he's a Hall of Famer, but Brees sits on passing touchdown 499. So the next passing touchdown he will, obviously, enters the 500. So it's really prestigious company. But right now, you know, the whole answer is like you asked before, you know, can the Ravens duplicate a no second half? I mean, it's just phenomenal what they've been able to do. This is a huge test, and I feel like, yeah, they've already faced a quality quarterback in Roethlisberger. You know, Dalton's always had their number, and he's got A.J. Green. But right now, the Ravens really want to prove their offense. This brings me back to the days of the 2000 team, and here's why, man. You remember the AFC title game in 2000? Who can forget? Mm-hmm. That was the number one defense versus number one offense. That was the Oakland Raiders back then. So this weekend, coming into this year, six games into it, or 6 weeks, obviously the Saints had a bye week, one game less played. They're coming off a bye, which you would think to be fresh, but as of right now, the Saints boast the number one overall offense and scoring and all that, not total yardage, obviously, in passing yards. There's two other teams ahead of them, believe it or not, Saints are third, but they got Kamara, they got Ingram, they got Michael Thomas, who's just playing out of his mind right now, and catching everything that's thrown his way, and the kid don't miss, and you got Brees, who's also playing on a crazy high level still at a Hall of Fame pace, so now number one offense versus number one defense. Here comes the clash. And we always say defense usually always wins or wins championships, but the Ravens really want to prove it. and prove that a 11 sack, 106 yard, no score performance on the road was good. You need to come home and just throttle this team. I mean, if it's a close game, so be it. But I feel like if the Ravens can show the offensive output, get out to a quick start, you know, let the defense feast, and you have the purple walls, all four sides yelling and screaming, I really think it's a recipe for a 5-2 brew here, man. I really feel it.
Now, I think this is going to be an interesting game coming up, at least for the offense and Joe Flacco, because the Saints' defense is not very good. They are not very good against the pass. And given the fact that the Ravens have so many targets, tight ends, wide receivers, you know, whatever they can throw at, and then the running game really hasn't set up correctly, that may actually play into the Ravens' favor this week because of that. So what do you see Joe and the offense doing this Sunday? Are they going to just be, you know, balls to the wall and going absolutely nuts and throwing the ball like crazy? Because you also, you know, give up the chance for interceptions and drop balls and stuff like that happening as well.
I mean, you don't hope it goes that far, because what's lost in all this is, now that we're starting to bring this up here in the offensive game plan, Alex Collins had a decent game Sunday, you know, and I know it's lost because of Crabtree and what the offense was able to accomplish, and the run-pass balance was great, and I don't know where this mantra, and I'm still trying to figure out why the Ravens threw it so much against Cleveland. They weren't down so much. Now, I can see they were down 14 to the Browns, but down 3 every time? No, come on, dude. It just was a real crazy, puzzling thing to try to figure out. But what I think what might happen here is, I don't want the Ravens to get into that, oh, we got to play at their pace. If the Saints start winging the ball around and they're scoring at a rapid pace, the Ravens are going to have to play catch up and get out of their game. If they play their game and let the Saints come to them, I think it's going to bode well. But Alex Collins ran the ball well, and I feel like if the Ravens establish the run first, it's going to open up the pass, and Flacco can't get pass happy unless we're trailing by a two scores in the second half or something crazy scenario. But Collins, you know, we said we get the fumbles under control. He did that. He had two rushing touchdowns, and it was phenomenal seeing that. One run was great. And you know, he put his head down and started grinding away, man. He was running the football and just doing his thing, and I was impressed by that. You know, that showed resilience. We talk about Crabtree, but how about, you know, no running game? There was a lack of running game all day against Cleveland, and then they just resurged against Tennessee, and just like, okay, where'd that come from? You know, you were blocking downfield, you're hitting your blocks, and they were calling the run. And speaking of that, as bad as I'm against these gimmick plays and taking Joe out in the red zone and doing this, but Lamar was like, what, a yard and a half shy of scoring? That was awesome, and I was hoping the Ravens would put him in a second sink, but hey, it almost worked.
It did. Yeah. So
guy's quick. Guy's quick. Use it to your advantage.
Yes, exactly. Very smart. So Drew Brees has never beaten Baltimore. That's very interesting. He's gone 0-4 against the Ravens. He's thrown 9 touchdowns, 8 interceptions since he's faced them in 2003. I'm surprised this game did not get flexed to prime time, because like you said, there's history to be made. Drew Brees, you know, with the next touchdown, you got the best offense against the best defense. This, as JR would like to say, is going to be a slobber knocker. It's going to be one that's one in the trenches, either or. So it's going to be interesting. But one of the X factors we got to talk about, I love bringing this up every week, is the weather. So the Ravens have played really well in the rain, and this is going to be their first time at home where it's not going to be pouring buckets. It's actually supposed to be mostly...
And it was raining on Sunday in Tennessee, right?
That's so right, yeah. They
Ravens
love the rain.
3-0 in the rain. It's weird. They have 3 of 4 wins in the rain.
Right, and there's zero chance of rain. It's mostly sunny. It's going to be a little chilly, high of 52.
Football weather, baby.
Football weather. But
I'm back. Yeah, I can't wait.
Who is that going to be a good thing for? Because, yeah, the Ravens have played really well in the rain, but... Drew Brees and the Saints, they play in a dome. It's air conditioned. It's nice. You don't have to worry about weather. You don't have to worry about temperature. So who is this in favor of, this really good weather, you know, on a fan level that we're going to have in Baltimore on Sunday? Who is it helping the most?
It's helping the Ravens the most, and I'll tell you why, man. Brees has come from in that dome, but you get him out of that dome, just like Peyton Manning was in his career. He's just not the same. It's just they don't like that, man. You get all cozy and warm down in Louisiana and Norla, and we're throwing the ball. It's the turf. It's quick. It's fast. It's loud. And I mean, the Ravens know they play there, you know, and they won a championship there. Special place that they play down in there for our sake. And you know, and they get out in the elements, and it's different. And you're on the road if that. Under lights in prime time on an important game, and you know, Breeze lives for it. They've been in these games before, but any dome team playing eight games at home in the warm, you bring them up in the elements. It always bodes well. Plus, the Ravens are always built here. I mean, Joe's played in snow. He's let it come back in snow. He's played in rain this year. Slop, you know, fog. I've seen him playing. I mean, it happens. You know, And this is AFC North football, and I'm really excited that's going to be, you know, mid-50s, partly hot, partly sun, whatever it is. It's that football, mid-October football weather, you know. You get the tailgate around noon. It's at dusk. It gets there in the evening. You know, by halftime, it'll start to get dark, and the lights come on. It's going to be that Friday night lights feel, kind of, where it's like, all right, man, playing under the lights. And you're right. You know, surprising that this game didn't get flexed. I think it's because the Ravens lost to Cleveland that happened, because the NFL was going to make a decision that following Monday, because there was an opportunity to, because the Saints were playing Monday night. And obviously, if they were going to win, which they did in crazy fashion, the Ravens were to win. They would have been 4-1 facing the scenes at the same target. So, and now, because the Bengals actually won their game and came back against the Dolphins, and the Chiefs, even though they were undefeated at that moment, they put Chiefs and Bengals on Sunday night, which isn't too far off. A 4-2 team, 5-1. Chiefs are high powered, and they were just on a Sunday night. This is their second Sunday night in a row. They just played against a track meet shootout game against New England. That was a crazy game. So, you know, rightfully so, but we got it. I mean, you got plenty of flex ones. I mean, hey, we play Pittsburgh here in 2 weeks at home, and who knows? If Pittsburgh did win, and they're half a game behind us, they're 3-2-1, and we're 4-2, and we already have the tiebreakers. We beat them, but hey, who knows? We beat the Saints, and we do work, and then we play the Panthers away. Who knows what the Steelers might do? They might flex that to an evening game or a night game, because it's the AFC North battle. It's another Ravens-Steelers bout. Hey, we might get a primetime game at home finally after that. So there's plenty. We're in flex time now. For any of us schedule, those who don't know, the later part of the weeks leading up to the holidays, any game in the afternoon, they can be flexed into Sunday night, because they want a marquee matchup, especially marching towards a playoff picture and getting a matchup that might not be a favor. NBC has that flexibility. Monday Night Football doesn't. Someone asked me, what did Monday Night Football do? Because sometimes we're stuck like watching this or Thursday Night Football. Thursday and Monday Night schedules are fixed, and they cannot move. I don't care if two teams are playing 0-4, their own 11 playing later Monday Night Football. It just happens to be that way, you know. And it was like that years back, a couple years ago, when the Ravens played the Texans on Monday night, and the Texans lost to Sean Watson, and you know, they were out of it, but we still had to play them on Monday night. And it just so happens that it's just mandated by the league, and that's just the way it is. But the Sunday nighters are awesome, because it's that flex opportunity that if your team's doing well and you don't get a primetime game on your slate, hey, you keep playing well this year and you play a premier team that's marching the same way towards playoffs like you are, you can get that game. So we might get it. We might not. We play the Bengals at home. They might be flexed. It could be flexed to 4 or 8. So, you know, stay tuned on that. The Ravens still slated to play all these 1 o'clock games, but it's going to be awesome, man. What a game is going to be on Sunday, dude. The Saints are coming here. As the old man show, they come marching in, but no, we're going to put a halt to that march real quick, brother.
That's right. Now, before we get out of here, there is another thing I want to bring up from the Titans game. Very scary sight to see Alex Lewis get carted off the field. I mean, they brought an ambulance pretty much right up to the field in the walkway there in the tunnel. To see him kind of get hit, looks like he hurt his arm, and then he falls, and then you see him bring like the back brace out and, you know, stabilizing his neck and everything. Super scary scene. I mean, the place was so quiet. And then he gets taken to the hospital, and you find out it's okay. He's actually traveling back with the team, and he doesn't have to stay there and like get emergency surgery or anything like that. So, I mean, great news that he's okay. Very surprising that there's potential of him playing this Sunday. From what I saw in that game, it looked like, you know, potentially his career could be over. But no, they're saying maybe we'll see him Sunday.
dude, it's an incredible thing to even talk about. Thoughts and prayers with Alex Lewis when it first happened. I didn't know what to think. I wasn't concerned at the. I don't want to say that right now, but I really wasn't because I really didn't know what happened. I was kind of like, I didn't even see him get hurt on the play, and apparently, I thought it was like his leg or something. But apparently, when I kept hearing the commentators talking and what was going on, and obviously I turned to Twitter for some updates, and when I saw it was a neck or spinal injury, I was like, oh, now I get it. Because I didn't even see it at first because I remember him walking. Then apparently he went down to his knees, and then all of a sudden he laid down. And it was like – so it must have came out of nowhere. I don't know if he got hit in the – I still can't see in the play because it was such a lot of bodies involved. It was that kind of a play. But, yeah, again, man, thoughts and prayers, Alex Lewis. You hate to see any player like that, especially when the boards come out and tape and they're taking a while in an ambulance and a cart. You know, that's no joke, man. It could have been – and I heard someone allude to it. It could have been another Ryan Shazier moment. And you just didn't know what was going to happen. And to hear that, you know, and I thought it was going to be a turn for the worse. You know, here he got rushed to a local hospital here from the game. And I was like, oh, my gosh, man. It's, you know, I'm not worried about his replacement. I'm worried about is he going to even play again or be okay and walk and all that. And when I heard he was moving his arms and everything and had feeling, I was like, okay. And then when I heard that he was going to be flying back to Baltimore for more tests, I'm like, well, apparently, if they're going to release him to go on a flight, I guess he's okay. And then when I hear he could return to limited practice and apparently try to play, I'm like, no, man, keep him 100%. But again, if the coaches are saying that, Coach Harbaugh is getting up there, he can allude to it, but the doctor's going to release him. So again, it's doctor blessing. They're not, especially something this serious, whether he had a concussion, and the diagnosis didn't come out yet. We're early in the week yet, but if it comes out, obviously we'll cover it. But I didn't see anything out of the ordinary, man. But a very scary move for Alex Lewis. In covering the back end of that, if it was a worst case scenario, if he was gone for the year or whatnot, I feel like a shuffling would occur. I think Alex Lewis, in his absence, I feel like Hurst, instead of stepping up, I feel like this is my thing. I like to see Hurst move, and I want to see Orlando Brown start. And he was in there in the game. If anybody recall, you know, Orlando Brown Jr. was the replacement on Sunday when Alex Lewis went down. And again, it was formidable for us. And but again, you know, you want to keep the line intact. We have something special going. Well wishes to Alex Lewis. I'm glad it's not serious. But dude, a very scary movement indeed, man.
Yeah, and he's very lucky, and we're lucky as fans that we get to watch him play, and that he's going to be okay. So I mean, you know, so good to see that he was able to leave the hospital and come back with the team, be with his family, and that type of deal. But the way it looked like, I mean, it looked like he got a stinger, and. You know, you could tell he was in pain, didn't know what to do, but it was good to see him on the cart and see him kind of moving his hands. So, I mean, that was a good sign right off the bat, but still a very scary sight to see when it happened. So happy that he's going to be okay. So, Josh, have we covered everything for this call episode this week?
I'm going to give a great and hearty, and with 11 sacks and a great defensive performance, quote the Raven, nevermore.
All right, guys, if you want to continue the conversation with Josh or I, you can. It's real easy. All you have to do is tweet to either one of us. You can tweet to me at Brando Cash. Josh, where can people tweet to you at?
At ItalianGQ52.
Go over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/thecallpodcast. Like us over there. Whenever a new show comes out, you'll be the first to know. Plus, we're always sharing any kind of Raven stuff that we find. And a little fun fact to everybody out there. On this day, here's some history lessons for you. On this day, 7 years ago, Josh and I first met at a Ray Lewis radio appearance, and we sat down at the same table, became friends, and boom, the podcast was born. So we shared the picture of Ray Lewis signing my Raven head that I got signed that night, but that was 7 years ago tonight. See, where else are you going to find trivia like that unless you like our Facebook page? Facebook.com/thecallpodcast. Now, we do the show for free. You listen, stream, and download for free on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Baltimore Sports Report Network, Player.fm, Overcast, Google Play Music, and Satchel. All we ask in return is for you to please spread the word about the show. Write us an Apple Podcast review, and then let people know on Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr and Pinterest and Instagram and Reddit and Snapchat and Vero and Twitch, anywhere you are social on the web with your phone. Say, I'm a Baltimore Ravens fan. I listen to The Call, and you should too. So that is pretty much it for the show this week. The Saints are coming to Baltimore. Josh, take us out the way you always do.
Brandon, man, thank you so much. And I guess I should have read your anniversary card here on the air, huh?
I had to make sure I got you an edible arrangement for that one.
Ah, yeah. I got my burger cookies in Old Bay. Yeah, man, it's been a great, great ride, and what it all started. But what a great, man. I feel like this show was absolutely jam-packed and awesome, historic. And, you know, but what better way to close out? You're right, man. Me and you met 7 years ago and, you know, got it all started with a Ray Lewis signing, and The Call was born. But I actually did meet the Hall of Famer now, Ray Lewis. I met him one Saturday, man. Another meeting and encounter with Ray Lewis was special as always. He was not wearing his gold jacket, but he was sporting his Hall of Fame ring. That thing looked good.
Nice.
But yeah, it was fun to meet Ray again. I got his photo and got him to sign a few autographs for me for Hall of Fame. It was great to, you know, be in his environment, and not only that, but it was a great show, and I'll share that too as well. But you know, got to speak to Ray for a bit. You know, he's just, you know, jovial as ever, smiling and being Ray, and you know, got the Hall of Fame Saints here, and I got it official, so that makes two Hall of Fame Ravens, and just great, man. And I want to thank my buddy Richie for coming along for the ride, and not only that, but I got to see another ex-teammate of Ray's. I got to see Anquan Boldin. He was there, Super Bowl 47 champion. Nice. We all know Anquan for his run, yeah, man, for his run here. So he was there. But just to give some insight on the show, Ray was the first time I got to see his full-time signature. It looks good. And, you know, but what this show was, it was awesome. It's a three-day event. It's called CSA Shows. They do it down in Chantilly, Virginia. I think it was the last show of the year. But what it is, it's a three-day weekend of sports stars, movie stars. There's a lot of autographs, meet and greets, photo opportunities, and there's tons of dealers. You see some of the most obscure things ever, from like estate collections to old school memorabilia to, you know, rookie cards to basketball shoes to, you know, I saw, get this, you like this, I saw a picture of Darth Vader in the Star Wars New Hope signed by the actor who played him.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, that was crazy stuff. I saw a Star Trek signed poster. I saw a box of Star Wars cards, like Tops. A dealer showed me a crazy thing. I had a LeBron James autographed shoe in my hand just looking at it. Crazy enough, and you'll never believe the stuff out there that's for sale. But
give you anything, insight. Anything about OJ?
No
OJ.
No OJ.
Good.
But I'll give you some history here. Speaking again, another historic thing. You know, again, you know, Ray was great, and I have nothing great things to say about that. I got another picture with him, and it just was great to see, man, and to meet him. I even, when I walked up to Ray, I was like, you know, I said, first time meeting the Hall of Famer, Ray Lewis. And he's just laughing and chuckling. He goes, thank you, young man. And he's again, he's Ray. He's awesome. And just meeting him. But I was in line with several Ravens fans, Brandon, from all over the world. You never believe this. Okay, so I'm in line, you know, to get in. And this, I guess, I don't know if it was his wife or girlfriend, but I, you know, whatever it was, she surprised this guy with the autograph tickets for Ray Lewis. They're from Atlanta. Ravens fans from Atlanta flew up here for that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Another wow factor. I'm in line, and the foot up the third in line to meet Ray Lewis. Guy in front of me, you can tell he's from the South, wearing a Ravens shirt. He's from Nashville, Tennessee. Get this. He flew up from Nashville. He's from there. Ravens fan. He's not from Baltimore. From Nashville. Flew up to the Ray Lewis autograph signing for Hall of Fame. He said his flight left that afternoon, and then he was going to go to the game on Sunday for the Titans-Ravens game. How about a weekend for that guy?
That's a good weekend.
And you know what he said? It was kind of crazy fitting how the Ravens outplayed that defense. He was talking to him last. I said, well, how did you become a Ravens fan in Tennessee? He said, I obviously used to be an Oilers fan, all that. And he goes, He goes, I fell in love with him in 2000, man. He goes, that defense. And I'm like, that's what I hear about. Everybody says it. So he said, that just drew me in. And it was all going forward. And, you know, got to see that and pick people's reactions. But there was something, a couple things I saw this weekend that were phenomenal. And you can't put a price on them. Obviously, it would have been a pretty penny. But I saw a triple set of. And I don't know if you know this. I'm not a card guy either, like a trading card, football, baseball. But they do these jersey patch cards that, like, they actually, like, cut a piece off their jersey. And sometimes they do a football, and they cut a piece off the jersey and insert it in the card, like, in a window.
Right.
And they're called jersey patch cards. There is a set of three Jim Thorpe cards. Two of them had jersey swatches from Jim Thorpe, and one, it was crazy. There was a signature on the card, and it was in pen, and looked like it was like a sticky note he signed, and they just stuck it in the card in the window. I saw a Jim Thorpe signature.
Oh, wow.
First time ever in my life. Yeah, man. Saw a Adrian Peterson rookie card. It was like one in the world. You know, it was a crazy amount. I saw a Latanya Tomlinson rookie card. I've seen a lot of things that were like just make you think like, wow, man. And you know, the road you're sitting on. I was talking to a dealer. They said they did an estate sale. They cleaned out somebody's house. They found a Mickey Mantle rookie card in the attic just chilling there. Like, just the things you find. Like, it's just like – just the talk from these dealers all over the world. Like, I'm like, what's this? And I look in, it's like an old baseball card. And they're like, oh, yeah, I found that in an estate sale. It was a Mickey Mantle sign. I was like, what? That thing's worth like hundreds of thousands. So I'm like, it's just crazy, man, the stuff that they tell you and share. And I had a great time seeing Ravens fans there. And actually, the Capitals were on there that Friday. The show's Friday through Sunday. The Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals were there, so you could have done a meet and greet with Ovechkin and the players. And obviously, Ray Lewis was there on Saturday. There's other players there on Sunday. I mean, there's players from baseball, basketball, football. You know, there's everybody. There's, you know, it's just awesome. There's Hall of Famers. There's, you know, a lot of all-star players and Pro Bowl players. So it's a great thing if you haven't checked it out. But I just wanted to get that info out there to close out the show. You got to see Ray Lewis, Hall of Famer, and not sure if he's going to be doing another Agar signing. So I just definitely want to jump in on that and get Ray and get that over with. And, and on the on to the Saints, and it's going to be a special game. 4 o'clock kickoff. It's a little bit of pride time. It's Sunday afternoon at the bank. I want everybody who's going there, just get there, root hard. It's going to be one of those games we're playing towards, pushing towards a playoff push right now. 4-2. How sweet would it be if we can send Drew Brees back to New Orleans? With an 0-5 record against the Ravens in his career, the only team not to do it. And right now, as it stands, Peyton Manning and Brett Favre are the only two players in the NFL who've beaten all 32 teams. And you might ask Joshua, how's that? Well, Drew Brees has beaten 31 because he did beat the Saints because he was a member of the Chargers before he got traded or let go as a free agent to the Saints, I should say. So Drew Brees obviously can't beat him. Everybody's like, well, he can't beat himself. Yeah. And seeing Brett Favre when he went to – you know, the Jets, he was able to accomplish that. And also with the Vikings and beating the Packers, his old team, and Peyton Manning, obviously he was a Bronco. So it's happened. So come full circle. Peyton Manning used to run a rick shot against the Ravens. We know that. Brett Favre, we had some special moments against. And if we can send Brees back an 0-5, and not only that, but 5's the number. Not only Brees getting the 5th loss against the Ravens in his career and be the only team he's never beaten, that'd be great for a Hall of Fame thing. You did everything except this thing. And until then, the Cowboys were the last team to be the actually not only the last player, but the Cowboys until last year. They were the last team not to beat the Ravens until that, but got broke. But besides the point, but the Ravens looking for the 5th win in 7 games, 5-2. But the Ravens are on a great, great plane now because not only that, but they just come – did 3 straight on the road. The Ravens' next 4 out of 5 games are home. So they go on the road against Carolina, and they're home after that for 3 straight, and we play the home this weekend. So home cooking, part with a trip to Charlotte, it's already here for the taking. So if they can really go on a run here with 2 divisional opponents at home, it's going to get really awesome here in the next month. So the Ravens have to take care of business on Sunday. It's important. It's imperative to show if you're the real deal. Do the same output, if not better, against Drew Brees and really shut that offense down. It's going to be tough. Number one offense versus number one defense. This is going to be one for the season, man. And I can't wait to get it started with Baltimore Ravens. Let's fly high.
This has been a production of Brando Cash Entertainment. Music by Brad Lepore and Daniel Kelly from the DBK Studio. For more information, go to brandocash.com.